When I started looking for clairvoyant virtuosi for this research, I found a lot more potential ones than those presented here. Bearing in mind that my research was restricted to only those cultures to which I have easy access, Anglo-Saxon and Polish, and to the best documented cases, the world is probably much richer in virtuosi than the ones who have left a trail for psychical researchers to follow. Joe McMonagall is probably right when he says that many people are potential psychics but do other things with their lives rather than devote them to clairvoyance as a profession. There are many spectacular, spontaneous cases that involve clairvoyance, and many people have flashes of clairvoyant intuition. That is what one would expect if psi is an inseparable aspect of consciousness, a fundamental unconscious engagement with the world, rather than an anomalous ability. On the other hand, while there are many psychic claimants, practitioners of clairvoyance with a verified track record are few, and they tend not to identify themselves in terms of a concept that for much of the populace brings to mind supernatural powers and associations with the occult, while probably even more people regard it as nonsense. There are, of course, various sections of Anglo-Saxon society where mediumship is acknowledged, taught and practiced within well-established organizations, and various organizations that practice and research remote viewing. However, that is not the case in Poland. See next chapter. More importantly, the virtuosi of clairvoyance become virtuosi because they specialize in what they do. This may happen because their life path takes a specific direction, such as when Joe McMonagall agreed to participate in the remote viewing program, or because one event leads to another, as in the case of Jackowski's fame spreading among the local people, or because they choose a specific course of action, such as Matthew Manning choosing to become a healer rather than researching his psychokinetic abilities. A number of mediums practice healing, testifying to a connection between various aspects of psi, and Jackowski had much success at giving medical diagnoses at the beginning of his career. Most psychics are probably capable of a lot more than they do, but, and this is crucial, practice makes, if not perfect, then certainly above average. According to Stefan Osoki, he learned the essential techniques for entering the right state from an old Jewish mystic, and worked on improving his knowledge. Joe McMonagall points out that, particularly with remote viewing, he was basically paid to do that, spending 12-hour days for years and years just learning and perfecting. McMonagall, 2012. Jackowski has now been a successful clairvoyant for more than 20 years. And the virtuosi get very good at what they do most often. Joe McMonagall learns to do remote viewing almost as routine, but has to learn to manage his out-of-body experiences, which, according to him, are a very different state, and looking for what he describes as mental triggers takes him months of effort. By the time he becomes involved in regular tests, Osoki can read through dozens of envelopes without trying very hard. Practice means training oneself to follow certain procedures, one of which is to induce in oneself an intentionally simplified altered state that enables one to seek out the target and focus on it. Remote viewers and parapsychologists are explicitly aware of this and apply techniques to facilitate such a state as, for example, in the Ganzfeld conditions and relaxation techniques. Osoki used to ask those present to talk among themselves rather than pay attention to him, while Jackowski, where possible, seeks environments that provide distractions. Creating a suitable environment seems to be the easiest aspect of the process to identify and recreate, while the most crucial and hardest seems to be the ability to recognize what McMonagall calls the taste. This sudden knowing is the truncated part of the process. It is different from the usual kind of scanning that is described by Carpenter as first sight, that is similar to responding to subliminal stimuli and not all that strange. However, it does strike us as strange when the clairvoyant describes a scene from 1,000 years ago, as does Osoki when holding a piece of ceramic from Biskupin, or a submarine which does not yet exist, as does McMonagall when given the coordinates of its location, or peers into a sofa bed miles away to find the incriminating bloodied shirt that was placed there more than a year before, as does Jackowski when given a photo and a pair of old trousers to hold. What is provided is exactly the information that is wanted. Joe McMonagall makes the valid point that for accurate focusing, one needs to be specific about dates and times when choosing the target. He mentions a whole series of failures at Stanford Research Institute where no time was specified and the target buildings he saw were not built until years later, and to expect bleed-through from the immediate past and the immediate future, McMonagall, 2013, Luck, 2132. Yet there may be more to accurate focusing in real-life cases when the intention is very specific, such as looking for a piece of evidence or being highly emotionally motivated, as when putting on the dead man's shirt that produces certainty about the body's location. The next stage of the process is more like the sensory processing based on physical senses. It is best to follow the maxim of remote viewers, say what you see, not what it looks like. For example, if a stimulus is interpreted as a swarm of bees, that conclusion precludes considering any idea that is contrary to it, but if you stop at a confusing cloud of shapes you remain open to broader interpretations. Carpenter, 2012, pages 27-9. That is why every effort is made to avoid front-loading in remote viewing, and why Jackowski prefers not to know anything about the case before he starts working on it. He is particularly wary of highly publicized cases, since it is impossible to switch off the knowledge one already has, as we are. Tkowska and Jackowski, Volume 2 p. 131. However, what McMonagall calls a taste, that basic sensation, is followed by further focusing that now involves conscious actions, such as drawing a map and providing specific elements. So this is not a simple process where suddenly all is clear, there is interaction between the intuitive and the logical, and the conclusions are based on both interpenetrating processes, complex and prolonged, and this is one of the ways in which professionals take eye processing to a different level. In remote viewing there also might be many sessions by a number of remote viewers revisiting the target before coming up with a report. Remarkably, they tend to get much convergent accurate information. What is also remarkable is the complexity of the channels through which the information arrives. When it is visual, there seem to be multiple axes of vision. We have the distant bird's eye view, such as McMonagall's first impression of the landscape around the building housing the submarine, or of the city of Padua where General Dozier is held, or Osoki's first impressions of enormous waters around Biscayne, or a belfry near the burial field that holds the body he is locating, or Jackowski's view of the village with the characteristic church where the girl with the vital evidence is to be found. But then you get detailed views of the design or the characteristics of the target, the submarine, the identifying marks of the buried body, the features of ancient settlement, or the underwater spring next to which the drowned body is to be found in one of Jackowski's cases. It seems that the mind at large operates differently, in a way that resembles some of the near-death experience accounts, like that of a woman who in that state saw a plaque with the manufacturer's name under the operating table she had been on, which was later found to be there. She described it as having multiple axes of vision, from many places at once. Rousseau, 2011, p. 208. Relevant information can also be heard. When looking at a photo of the missing dog, Jackowski hears the name Quiatua, adjectival form of flower, which makes him think it refers to Quiatua, Flower Street. This turns out to be correct, yet is unlikely to have come from the missing dog. As he puts it when talking about the information that seems to come from the dead, it is not so much hearing as understanding, as we are. Tkowska and Jackowski, Volume 2, p. 56. This brings to mind an explanation of how the messages from the dead reach her, given by Feda, supposedly a young Indian girl who acted as the control of the famous medium Mrs. Osborne Leonard. "Well, sometimes I sees a thing that I ought to hear, but I can't hear it, so I sees it. Do you see? Dot. And sometimes I can only hear a thing and I can't see it at all. Some sittings I just happen to be in what you would call the seeing vibration. And if I gets into it then it is easier to see whatever has been told me, It is easy to see it in pictures or in symbols. But another time, if I happen to get into a hearing vibration, then it is easy to hear. This does not provide greater illumination, it just demonstrates that the channels of communication have been open for a long time and remain mysterious. As has already been said, it seems that the most perceivable targets are emotionally significant or dramatic, Schwartz, 2014, p. 12, but this does not mean emotional involvement by the clairvoyant, remote viewer, as opposed to strongly engaged intent. Mediums can also be remarkably matter-of-fact about contacting the discarnates when they do it professionally, Gould, 2022. However, in the case of Jackowski, emotional engagement seems to play a vital role. It may be that his attitude and manner of working is affected by the kinds of targets he deals with, becoming immersed in the current human distress that becomes very real to him. For him, physical contact with a photograph or personal possession seems essential, as it did for Ossoki, and a number of other clairvoyants have felt that handling an object belonging to someone helped to establish contact. The significance of psychometric objects is not clear, but there is one interesting semi-anecdotal account that may have some bearing on the subject. During some experiments organized by professors from Warsaw University in 1963, Father Klimoszko was given a number of photographs to comment on, which he did successfully. However, in one case he gave a reading that applied to the person who stole the photograph rather than the person pictured in it. The photograph showed the experimenter's daughter, but Klimoszko described a psychopathic monster who was causing a great deal of concern to the person caring for her. This fitted the personality and events surrounding a deeply disturbed girl, an orphan who stole the photograph and carried it on her person for 2 weeks, Klimoszko, 1989, p. 38. There is also the case of Ossoki asking for a different, more personal object when he attempts to make contact with the target person, Barrington, 2005, p. 113. While some of Jackowski's readings can involve intense physical immersion, smelling, handling, this may be yet another channel of information flow that is present to a greater degree in some individuals. The clairvoyants discussed here are very different personalities, come from different backgrounds and cultures, but achieve success in similar tasks involving psi. They also have other things in common. They know how to shape the conditions required for success. Even if they don't always work, they have their beliefs and rituals, which they have worked out over years of experience that give them confidence. They know how to calm themselves, to reduce unnecessary input and to fire but control their imagination. They have the resilience to accept failure, and the analytical judgment to hold back the intellectual overlay when it would interfere with the experience, but employ it in interpreting the experience. However, if psi is operating all the time, why are there so few clairvoyants around, and why does it appear that only 1% of us are capable of making use of this innate ability, and even that 1% often gets it wrong, 65% success rate being regarded as high? Why can't more of us make use of it? Practice indeed makes a difference, but there appears to be something else that distinguishes the virtuosi. It has been suggested that most mediums had some kind of traumatic experience in their past, and this is certainly true of the virtuosi discussed here. Ossoki is reported to have had psychic experiences since puberty, but it seems to have been the trauma of imprisonment and being sentenced to death during the Bolshevik Revolution that released what he regarded as his spiritual powers. Joe McMonagall had a difficult, quite traumatic childhood and was probably psychic all his life, but he did not realize it and accept responsibility for it until after he went through a near-death experience at the age of 24, when he watched the efforts to resuscitate him, finding himself popping in and out of his body, McMonagall, 2006, p. 177. Father Klimoszko's psychic development followed traumatic experiences during World War II when he was beaten and tortured by German soldiers. Jackowski's trauma seems to be ongoing, and involves an unresolved urge to seek the meaning of life and his experiences. So perhaps it is having an NDE, like Joe McMonagle, or a traumatic experience like facing a death sentence for Osaki, or rejecting your life like Jakowski, that is the link between these people. Perhaps it somehow unbalances the usual relationship between mind and body and enables them to enter states of consciousness, which are not available to those of us who have avoided trauma. Perhaps it means a degree of disengagement from the reliance on physical senses. Which brings us to back to Grosso's question mentioned earlier, if psi is universal on a small scale yet seems to work only sometimes and only for some individuals that are unusual in some way on a scale that can make a big difference, then what is it for?